and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast. Another week, another potential lockdown. Hello, Ben.
Oh, hello.
In about half hour, we're recording this Monday afternoon. In about half hour, Boris is going to be telling the nation about the new three-tiered system, which basically I think is shut the north, don't go to Scotland, stay in London.
It's going to be, whatever happens, it's going to be confusing.
Of course it will be.
Yeah.
Of course it will be. It's weird because I've actually decided, it's going to happen just as I've decided to book a couple of nights away somewhere, isn't it?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
So in a couple of weeks' time, I thought, I'm going to go away for a couple of nights, going to take the godchildren away. Right.
Mm.
And the moment I book it, you just know they're going to say, no, you can't mix households now. It's going to happen.
Of course.
Sod's law.
Will you obey it?
I mean, if they say don't, you've got to, Ben. You've got to stick to the rules.
Well, not if you're an MP.
No. The thing is, right, I've been to a couple of pubs in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
And you know me, I'm all for the masks. I don't really have a problem wearing a mask, going into a shop or whatever. But I must admit, I got a little bit pissed off the other night when I was at a pub and wore the mask to go in the pub, sat down with my mates at the table, took the mask off because you got a drink.
Yeah.
Got up to go to the loo and this very over-officious bouncer woman came running over to me going, oh, excuse me, if you stand up, you've got to put a mask on.
Oh, ridiculous.
And I thought, what, COVID works at different heights? You've got me in a pub with no ventilation. Everyone in here is not wearing a mask. So me walking to the toilet without a mask, I suppose their argument is perhaps you're walking nearer people passing tables. But I must admit, I just thought, oh, this is getting a bit ridiculous now. It hasn't changed my mind about the mask thing. I'm not anti-mask, but I just felt that was a little bit over the top.
So I wonder if that would apply if a child was in the pub. I know the children don't have to wear them anyway. Or a very short person was in the pub. If they're at the same height as... If they're at the same height as you whilst you're sitting, because you're quite a tall guy,
yeah,
would they have to wear the mask?
I suppose it's not the height that's the issue. Is it the fact you're moving about is the issue?
Right. It still seems very arbitrary, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to argue with her. I just went, oh, sorry, and popped the mask on. I just thought this isn't the place to have a debate with you about the way COVID might work. I mean, at least ventilate the pub if you think that that's going to help. I don't know, it was the first time where I was like, oh, this is just three pubs I've been in now, and they've all had slightly different rulings on it. And I thought, again, there's no consistency. And I thought, I don't know if I can be bothered again. I just sort of had enough of it.
And bouncers aren't exactly famous for their sort of being reasonable.
No. And I wasn't even sure she was talking to me to start with. So I think she had to sort of get my attention. So she probably shouted a bit more than she needed. So that sort of put my back up a little bit.
Wow.
To start with. So anyway, I've still got my mask and I'll wear it. Basically, wear it if you're not sitting down, wear a mask. That seems to be the new rule.
Right.
If you stand up, put it on.
Oh, God. Why is nothing straightforward with this?
The thing is, like you say, it does seem, you know, ridiculous, really, that because they're talking now about always wearing a mask when you're outside as well. Because I tend not to wear the mask if I'm just walking down the street. If I'm going into a shop, I'll put it on. Have I got to now start wearing it all the time, just walking about? Do you wear it as a postman? Do you wear it all the time when you're on route?
No, not at all.
Because you're outside.
Yeah. I heard a radio presenter the other day who was talking about the idea of having to wear a mask outside all the time, even when you're on your own. Which I hadn't heard that was actually coming in as policy. I thought he was just talking about it as like a hypothetical idea. But is it actually going to happen?
Well, it's one of the, I think it's a recommendation put forward by one of the health organisations NHS England. So it's been put forward as an idea anyway. I don't know. But isn't it, I mean, we've been talking, people must be so bored of us talking about masks, but it is like, you know, it's such a massive thing, isn't it? We're, you know, it's like we're all superheroes. We're all looking for our masks all the time. Have I got my mask? Yes, got my mask.
Would that apply to me in my job? I'm not saying that it shouldn't apply to me. If it does, it does. That's fine. But as a key worker, am I forced to wear a mask?
If you'd have to wear a mask. If the rule is you've got to wear a mask when you're outside, you'd have to wear a mask.
Right.
It's not going to be everyone wear a mask, but posties. Because actually, I was seeing that COVID can survive on money and letters and things. I think I read for 28 days.
Really?
So if you've got COVID as a postman, if you're coughing and spluttering over my mail, shoving it through my door, that's a ticking time bomb you're sticking through my letterbox. Unbelievable.
Yeah, of course, it's not just me who handles the mail. The mail will get sorted out and thrown around in the morning and, well, not literally thrown around, but you know what I mean.
Literally. the state of some of it comes through my door.
I hope, by the way, I know this is a bit of a tangent, I hope you don't have one of those horrible spring-loaded letterboxes.
What do you mean a spring-loaded letterbox?
You must have seen these things. They're like saw traps.
Are these the ones that got like the little brush inside as well?
No, not a brush. They are on a spring. I think the idea is so that the wind doesn't blow through your letterbox.
I think mine is on a spring. Yeah, I think it is.
Well, remove it immediately.
Why?
Because I've almost lost my fingers with these
things. Where's your carelessness? I've lived here 16 years. Not one postman has ever had any issue. I've never found half a finger in my letterbox.
I got my fingers trapped in one of those once, and then a wasp.
We already know how lackadaisical you are in your approach to your job.
A wasp landed on my arm.
Lords. A wasp landed on your arm, and this is good already.
And I wrenched my hand back, and I almost, I think the expression is, degloved my hand.
Well, that's not the letterbox's issue.
No, it was a 50-50, that one. It was half the letterbox and half the wasp.
Yeah. So now you're anti spring-loaded letterboxes.
Yes, I am.
You quite happily have letterboxes that just rattle in the wind 24/7.
You could put a tea towel in it.
A tea towel?
Yeah, I've seen people stuffing tea towels in their letterboxes to stop them flapping around.
Well, I mean, that seems such a bizarre thing to change a spring-loaded letterbox for one that isn't spring-loaded, and they just stick a tea towel in it. When a spring-loaded letterbox would seem to be... I'll tell you the weird thing with my letterbox is it's... I'm guessing it's, I live in a house that's 100 years old or so. I'm imagining it might not be the original door, but the front door's probably very, very old. Because it's a smaller letterbox than the standard size.
So they're annoying.
So the postman often has to knock at my door when there's something like a birthday card because it won't go through and he doesn't want to bend it.
Yeah.
So, although he managed to shove through some stuff the other day, I mean, I wasn't in, so I came home. I don't think it was a normal postman because I don't think he would have shoved it through with such a lackadaisical attitude. Found this stuff all on the floor, envelope half ripped open.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm not going to complain because it wasn't something I asked for.
Oh, okay.
I thought, what the hell is this stuff? And it was something someone had sent me. That's a nice gesture, but I didn't want it. It's no good to me. Anyway, there's letterboxes sorted out.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd be talking about that today, but there it is.
There it is. You never know what's going to come up on the Trev and Ben podcast. So in Parliament today, I hope they're going to be very careful about the number of people. Yeah, it's a big announcement.
Is there?
I hope they're going to be careful about the people they're going to let in to hear it. Because that Scottish woman, she's went in, didn't she, with old...
I feel very mixed about her, you know.
Well, I don't quite know. So she tested positive while she was in London. Is that right? And then went into the Parliament, then got the train back to Scotland, all knowing she was positive.
Yes, I think she certainly got the results while in London, and then knowingly positive for coronavirus, got on a train to Scotland. And I think she also went to a beauty spa or did some other stuff that she shouldn't have done with COVID.
It's ludicrous. So I hope was she suspended from the SNB?
No. Nicola Sturgeon has quite firmly said, I think she should quit, but I cannot sack her.
But I think she was suspended from the party. She can't sack her as an MP.
I think she lost the party whip, whatever the hell that means.
Right, I think that basically means you're not part of the party anymore.
But she's still very much a serving MP.
Yeah, No, because she can only be elected out or resign.
And she has not quit. She refuses to. And part of me thinks you absolutely should go. You've really breached the rules and you're in such a position of importance that if you're not seen to be at least quitting or resigning over this, then you really ought to be. But then the other part of me thinks, why the fuck should she quit? Dominic Cummings didn't get sacked. Why should she go?
Well, I suppose, yeah. The thing is, you want, like, Dominic Cummings shouldn't be the bar that we're all aspiring to.
And he's not even elected.
No, I know. I know. He should have gone. We talked about this at the time. Of course he should have gone.
So I
feel that doesn't mean that someone shouldn't go now. Just because Dominic Cummings didn't go, I won't go. I think you should actually take a bit of a moral stance and say, yeah, I did wrong. It's probably the right thing for me to go. Or at least, I mean, I don't know how it works, but at least she could... If she was to say, relinquish my seat, but I'm going to stand again... So it would trigger a by-election, although you don't want a by-election at the moment. You don't want people going to polling stations here.
No.
But
and I imagine she's probably more than willing to cling on to her £80,000 a year job.
Yeah. Well, she's a lucky woman, isn't she?
Well,
lucky woman. So 80,000. Is that what a politician gets these days?
Apparently that's what her salary is. So, yeah, not bad.
It's not a bad wage, is it?
No. And they don't do much. Oh, by the way, speaking of politicians not doing much,
yeah.
I should mention for later on in the podcast, I've had a response again.
What, from Mims?
From Mimsy.
Well, hang on, because last week she'd escalated it to Grant Shapps, the Transport Minister.
I've had a reply from the Department of Transport, so we'll look forward to that later on.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
It's not very often you get... Oh, she's really on it.
She seems quite good, to be fair. Trev, you know earlier on I was talking to you about being a postie
and the
various trappings and pitfalls of the dangers of the job.
I know. I mean, when you hear of people being a postman, you don't think about the... Obviously, dogs, you're aware of, that they're an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think of the dangers of different letterboxes. And,
And
I suppose there's also... how many letterboxes... I remember once, years ago, delivering leaflets for a little while, helping someone out. And I never liked the letterbox that's at ground level almost.
Oh, the backbreakers. No, don't like those.
Do you get many of those?
More than I'd like.
I mean, who came up with that idea? That's a ludicrous system.
I think I heard of one, not in my depot, but there was one area of the country that had all this new builds on it. Sorry, this is probably really boring. Had all these new builds with ground floor or, foot high letterboxes on every single door, and they ended up having to come up with some different solution to it because of the amount of postmen going off with a bad back having done the route for a week.
That's a great way of getting on the sick, isn't it? So I've done that a week. I've been doing that. My back. Someone else had better do that one.
I tell you what, I do occasionally get a bit of backache, but the worst one, the bigger danger for me is because I'm so tall, I often get quite a nasty head rush when I end up standing up again quite too fast. I almost pass out.
Wow. I mean, this posting business is, it's hard graft, isn't it?
I tell you what, some soldiers think they've got it tricky. Try being a postman.
Yeah, you must come home with PTSD, mustn't you?
So I should stress before I tell you this story, basically, I've been screamed at again.
Again?
Yes, but I want to stress about 98% of the people I interact with on a daily basis are lovely and very pleasant.
I tell you what you've done over the last few weeks on this podcast is prove your non-suitability for this job. I mean, thank God you're in it, and thank God that nobody in management has heard any of these podcasts.
Oh, I'd be out the door.
Because otherwise I think there'd be a P45 coming your way pretty swiftly. So now let's see what happened this week, and let's see who's to blame.
Yes. Well, this week, again, I had to deal with one of the unfortunate 2%. And I was delivering to an area I'm not familiar with because I was sent out to do a bit of extra stuff.
Right.
And I pulled up and I parked the van and I looked to my left. Now, that process sounds pretty dull. And it took all of 3 seconds I was parked for before I glanced to my left. There was a woman who had pulled up alongside my van. And she was screaming at me. I thought, have I cut you up accidentally on the road? Or I don't know why you followed me in here, because it was a little cul-de-sac.
Okay.
And she starts screaming and pointing. And she's pointing at me and past me and saying, I need to get to my driveway.
Have you parked across her driveway?
Yeah, I had. But,
Ben,
but...
Well, I mean, already you're in the wrong.
But, no.
We don't need to go any further, Ben. It's another... Like, honestly, your disciplinary record should be growing.
Listen, in my defence, yeah. The van had stopped for... And I'm not exaggerating for comic purposes. I had been there for, I would say, 3 to 4 seconds.
Right. Now, can I just ask...
I was still sitting in the van.
Right. Now, the thing is, once you had got out of the van, I mean, were you aware that you had parked across a driveway?
No, I wasn't.
Or was this, once again, just... Like you're daydreaming, Ben the postie, not taking any notice of your surroundings. Oh, it's a new lawn. Just trot over that like a clodhopper.
No, I didn't do anything intentional. And I just stared at her, giving her my sort of why have you gone from 0 to 60 psycho bitch screaming mode.
Right, yeah.
Why are you reacting like this? I just gave her one of my withering stares.
Yeah.
At which point, she, with both fists, starts... beating her steering wheel furiously. And then she...
Is she hooting as well? Or just smacking the steering wheel?
She didn't hoot, no. She was just smacking the steering wheel like a maniac. And then she starts screaming about her driveway again. So I very calmly gestured to her and sort of held up one finger to her, not that one. And I just said, 1 second... I'll move.
Right.
And then I reversed the van out of her way. She pulled into her drive. I thought that's the end of that.
Oh, no, she's not letting this go because she's in that stage of rage.
Yeah.
Where there's no calming down.
Yep. So...
I'm loving this. I hope she's coming over and she's... I want to have right in your face.
She came storming up to me.
Oh, I'm loving
this. Screaming all the way and saying, why did you block my drive? Yeah. I pulled up alongside you and you blocked my drive.
She is perfectly within her rights to be this angry, Ben.
And I just said to her very calmly, very nicely, I didn't raise my voice.
Yeah.
I just said, if I had seen you, I wouldn't have deliberately blocked you.
Right.
Didn't help.
It sounds a very reasoned response.
Yes. With she then followed up with, why did you block my drive? I pulled up alongside you. To which I calmly said, for a second time, again, if I had seen you, I wouldn't have blocked you.
Well, now just repeat yourself, ain't gonna help matters.
Well, that's what she was doing. So at which point I turn and walk away.
Oh, you can't just walk away. Surely you've got to see this through.
She turns her back on me, goes off on a swearing, incomprehensible rant, storms into her house. And as I finish my delivery and I walk back towards the van, I can hear her in her house.
Going?
Inside the house, I can hear her slamming things, screaming.
How long have you been away?
About 60 seconds.
Oh, right, so you've not gone and kind of delivered to the whole road?
Oh, no, it was just a one-house drop-off.
Right, okay.
But I just thought, what is wrong with you? What I must have inconvenienced you by all of 3 seconds. This is how this should have gone. She pulls up alongside me. I glance over and she says, oh, sorry, would you mind moving back a bit? I say, certainly. Well, happy to do it. Sorry if I got in your way there.
Yeah.
And that's the end of that. That's how that works. Why are people always so quick to screaming? I realise that now I'm screaming, but...
I know, well, calm down. Well, you don't know what's happened before.
I don't
care. She's got to this point. She might have had a hell of a morning, and you were the straw that broke the camel's back.
Hell of a morning? It must have been about 7 o'clock. I don't know how bad it could have been going.
Oh, but honestly, if you've been in those situations where you lose it like that... I mean, what's the most... You know when you get to that really full-on rage thing? And it normally is something like that that tips you over the edge. You know, she might have been working nights. She might have come off a night shift. She might have had a head of a night. The boss has been awful. She might be a nurse, for all we know.
She'd be the least caring nurse you'll ever come across in your life.
Were there any clues to... like anything about her? How old was she? What sort of age are we talking?
I would say mid to early 60s.
Oh, mid to early 60s. I was going to say perhaps she'd been on a school run, dropped the kids off somewhere, but no.
No, she was behaving like an escaped mental patient. I just don't understand why people need to react so hot. I tell you what, I have been in the situation you describe. I don't often lose my temper with people. It's very rare,
yeah.
Especially in public.
Yeah.
But it happened to me once. A guy chastised me for pulling out of a car park too fast. And I had a really shitty day at that point. And I basically told him where to go with a few choice words. And then when I got out of the car park, I thought, oh, you've been a dick. And then yeah. I went back into the car park, found him, apologised and said, sorry. I said, I'm really sorry, mate. I've had a really shit day. You didn't deserve that. I'm sorry. And at which point he said, oh, no problem. And I think, you know, you can have a shit day, you can lose your rag with people, but at least have the decency to acknowledge when you're being a prick.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I think the thing about rage, I've had a few situations where I've lost it. And you're right, like on some occasions, you just sort of, you're brought back down to earth. Something brings you back from the brink. You know, I think I've told you this story before. I was once at Victoria Station and I had a dreadful day and I was trying to buy a ticket from the machine and it wasn't working. And I'd lost the plot. And I'd also lost all perspective of where I was and who was around me. So I'm sort of punching the machine going, fucking ding, fucking ding. And this guy comes up to me. He's like, you're all right, mate.
Oh.
And that kind of brought me out of it.
Yeah.
And you realise, fucking hell, I must have been going off more than I thought for someone. And I said, yeah, I've just had a bad day. Is there anything I can do to help?
Like, oh, nice. Nice guy.
Nice guy. Nice guy. But then I've been in a situation when the rage won't go.
Right.
And or it dissipates for a while. So when a few years back, we talked about this... a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about your locksmith.
Oh, don't remind me.
So that time when I got locked out of my house and I had to wait for the locksmith, and it took, I mean, I waited a long, long time, right? And I was just furious that I'd managed to get myself locked out of the house. So I was more angry at myself and the situation. I wasn't angry at the locksmith. And I tried to get in the house because I've told you this, you know, I was trying to fish my keys because through the front room window, because they were in my trouser pocket, and my trousers were in the front room because I was just wearing shorts. And the policeman was walking by and he thought I was breaking in to the house. So there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
Right? And I was just so angry. And I'm sort of stomping around my front garden. And then I'd just lose it. I'd just absolutely lose it. And I'd start, I was punching the wall of the house. Just like, fucking hell, fuck's sake. And then I calmed down for a little while and sort of, you talk to yourself, you think, well, come on, Trev, you know, there's nothing you can do. You tried to get the keys, that's failed. You just got to wait. And then a few minutes later, the rage would come up again. And they'd be like, fucking hell, fuck's sake. And then there was that awful moment. Again, there was a moment that brought me back from the brink, having gone through this sort of cycle of rage and calm for probably about an hour or so. And I was just punching the wall, going, fucking hell. And I looked over, and there was a woman parked in a car opposite me, just staring at me, just like,
oh,
you are a fucking lunatic. And I thought, God, I've got to stop now, because that's sort of rather embarrassing.
So do you think that's what happened with my woman then? Do you think she maybe wasn't ready to be at the apology stage yet and needed to dissipate a little bit?
Yeah, sometimes you've just got to, you can't do anything about it. You know, when you're in that stage of rage, and it's so exhausting when you're in that stage as well, but you just like crashing stuff about, that's the only way to do it, isn't it? Kick stuff, throw stuff about.
So what you're saying is she wasn't necessarily at the point where she was ready to apologize.
No, I mean, she might just be a horrible bitch.
But she might be.
But you might find that you come across her another day and she'll say, look, I'm really sorry about it the other day.
Well, it's extremely unlikely I'll ever see her again.
Right.
Because, as I say, it was a little bit of extra work in an area I don't normally go to. So it's extremely unlikely I'll ever clap eyes on her again. But now that I've listened to what you've had to say, I might be tempted, because, of course, I remember where she lives now.
Yeah.
I could always go back round, knock on a door and say, hello, is there anything you want to say?
No, that's not going to help. The apology has to come from them. You can't go and ask for them, especially if you're parking across a driveway before you go and knock.
Oh, I'll definitely do that.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, Ben, I talked to you about... do you remember when I had that text from a wrong number?
Yes, I do.
And I said that it was one of those things that I didn't feel equipped for because I'm the wrong generation. Mm-hmm. There was something else that happened to me this week that, again, was a little sign that I'm not... There are elements of the modern world that I can't deal with, right? So I'd been out and I needed to fill up. And it's the first time I've filled the car up with petrol since... beginning of March, because I barely used the car since lockdown and all of that.
Okay.
So I went to the petrol garage. I'd been out for the night, so this is on the way home, stop off at the petrol garage, and I thought, oh, because of all this COVID stuff, I'll pay... This particular garage gave you the option to pay at the pump.
Right.
I've never done this before, because I'd always go to the window and pay there, because I'm not, you know, I just prefer that. I prefer that. But I thought with the whole COVID thing, it probably makes sense.
Was it one of those pumps where you tell it how much you want and then it gives you exactly that amount?
Or no.
Was it, oh, okay. So it's a fill up and then pay when you finished.
Well, yes. This is what I did. I put the card in. You had to put your PIN number in. And now I followed the instructions that I thought to the letter. And I got home and I checked my phone and I'd had the update from the bank. Get the little text message. And it says... you have paid £1 from your account.
Okay.
And this is about 10 o'clock at night. And as I'm looking at the text, because I've got home and I've gone straight upstairs to get ready for bed, right? So I'm sort of getting ready for bed. I've already taken my trousers off. I've got the phone out of my pocket. Oh, it's £1. What's gone on here? And then I thought, what do I do? Because I filled up with about 40 odd quid's worth of petrol. And what I didn't want was to go to bed. I thought, I'm not going to sleep if I go to bed worrying about this because something's gone wrong here. So A, I'm going to worry about it. I'm not going to sleep. Two, the fear is the police are going to turn up at my doorstep at some point and say, excuse me, sir, we think you have left without paying for your petrol.
Well, that would be unlikely, I'd suggest.
Well, you just don't know, do you? You know?
You're probably more likely to get a letter through the post regarding your... I don't know what you call it, because it would be a strange thing to accuse you of stealing deliberately when you bothered to pay £1.
Well, I know, but I just thought, oh, you know, I can't relax now. So I had to get sort of put my trousers back on, got back in the car, drove back to the petrol station.
I wonder if they bother sending you a letter for the sake of 39 quid.
Well, I don't know, but there'd be something somewhere, wouldn't there? You know, like against you that you've not paid for your petrol. And, you know, I was thinking, it was all going through my head. It was like, would they come and knock at the door?
No.
I mean, it's a possibility. I was thinking that's a possibility. But more likely, the next time I'm in the car, I'm going to get pulled over because there'll be some pinging message on a police car with, you know, that number plate recognition thing. I'll be pulled over and they say, well, excuse me, sir, on this date we have you a record that you left a petrol station without paying for your petrol. So all this like fear and stress was going through me. So I got back in the car, even on the journey back to the petrol station, which is only about a 10-minute drive, right? I'm thinking, I'm concerned that I might even get pulled over.
Oh, Trev.
In case, like, the message had gone out. You know, calling all cars. So
this is in Croydon. The police have enough shit to deal with.
Yeah, but, you know, I was just, you know, I don't like to think that I've done wrong and that there's, you, do you know what I mean? I was just stressing. I was really stressed out about it.
Can I ask, the hell did this happen? Because the way these things work, you fill up with the amount of petrol.
Yeah.
That then displays a price. You put your card in, you put your PIN number in, and it pays the price. So how on earth did you pay £1?
No, because it's done differently. You put the, this was the thing, right? All the instructions where you put your card in before you do all the PIN stuff before you fill up. It's not taking the money. Because that was the other thing. I was thinking, have I just... Because I did all that before filling up, have I just paid £1 for what was left from somebody else's thing, and I've done it all the wrong way around? So it's like, I didn't know what had happened, right?
Or maybe you entered your PIN at the wrong time, and it's issued you with the minimum payment, which would be a quid. I don't know. Doesn't sound like it's your fault, to be honest.
Well, no, but I was stressed about it.
I wouldn't get stressed about it.
You know, these things stressed me out because I knew I wouldn't sleep. There's no way I would have slept that night had I not have resolved it.
Really?
Absolutely. I couldn't have slept. So I drove back to the petrol station, went up to the window, and I said to the woman, I said, look, I filled up at pump two about 10 minutes ago or so. I've got home and either I've done something wrong or I've been undercharged because I put about 40 odd quid in and my message on my phone says a pound's been taken. And she said, I mean, this is the thing, right? If you normally do this, you know how it works probably. She went, oh, no, that's how it works. It takes a pound initially when you first put your pin in and then it will take the rest, but not straight away.
What a confusing system.
And she was very nice. She thanked me twice for my honesty for going back. But I needn't have gone back. It was all fine. But I thought, what a complicated thing of the modern world that is, that I am no longer equipped to deal with. That stressed me out. Like, why not do it? If you're going to pay at the pump, do it the way as you suggested. You fill up, then you put your card in, you know it's all done. All this put it in first business, that confuses me and stresses me out. Don't need it.
Yeah. I must say, though, I think there would be a part of me in that situation which could not only sleep perfectly at night, but would also think I'm up on the world. You know, I've got, finally, the world has given me an advantage somewhere.
But there's no way you're getting away with that. When you think, like, all petrol stations have got CCTV, you know, they probably get a lot of people that run away without paying for their petrol, and it's probably like a normal thing. It's just reported to the police, you know, look out for this car, you know. And I just thought, I don't need that stress every time I go out thinking, oh, shit, you know, the police are on. Even, you know, had there been a genuine mistake and I'd paid a pound and that was all it was going to charge me, then for the rest of however long that this would be hanging over me, I'd be thinking, oh, I'm going to be stopped at some point and it will catch up with me in the end.
Well, let's boil this down then, because at some point you've got to think, oh, well, fuck it, that's life. What happens if you get home from the supermarket and you find an onion in your bag that you've realised you haven't paid for? Would you panic over the onion?
It still stresses me out a little bit, that sort of thing. I wouldn't take the onion back.
Right.
But there'd be a little bit of me for a small amount of time. If you're looking at that scenario, there'd be a small part of me that would panic briefly about, you know, have I somehow now been marked down as a shoplifter somewhere? It's like when I ordered, I once ordered, like, you know, an online shop from Sainsbury's, but amongst the stuff, I wanted to buy a new rucksack. So the rucksack came, but in the rucksack was an item of children's clothing. Right. And even that stressed me out for a few minutes because I was thinking, oh, God, you know, like, has this been somehow, like, I was really worried that somehow I'd be blamed for this thing. And I've then sort of, yeah, that didn't last me that long, but it stressed me out for a little bit. I don't need that sort of stress.
You and I are very, very different people because you're sweating over this 39 quid that you thought you'd potentially stolen.
Yeah.
I once...
Well, here we go.
Amazingly and accidentally managed to get myself sent by a company an iPad, which I hadn't paid for.
Yes, I remember this.
And I didn't lose any sleep over that.
Didn't you sell it on eBay?
Yep.
You scum. I think you and I are both animal lovers, aren't we, Ben?
Yeah, definitely.
And there's just seemed to have been a lot of animal stories in the last week that I've been reading. And I want to run a few of these things past you.
Okay.
The first one is probably the biggest question of all. There seems to have been a sort of spate of escaped animals. So in America, some bison have escaped for the second time. They've managed to do a runner from their fields.
I mean, once is understandable, but twice is just carelessness, surely.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So these bison have been roaming the streets of Washington. A serial escapee bear has been caught again in Italy.
Again, again, you use the word serial. Yeah. This bear has done it more than once.
More than once, yeah, yeah. He's broken from his, what they call his prison. I don't think it's actually a prison.
Enclosure, surely, not prison. Yeah. What are the Italians doing?
But he's done a runner from there several occasions, and he's been re-caught again. And then there's been some emus on the run in Australia. They've escaped from their place. And it just got me thinking, right? If an animal escapes, particularly more than once, so like the bear and the bison,
yeah,
do you think that they should just like, just let them be? I think if they've managed to do it twice, it's like, yeah, just you've earned your freedom. Off you go.
Well, on a moral level, I kind of agree with you. But then again, you can't really have bison wandering the streets of Washington just at their whim, can you?
I just thought it was... Well, no, but I thought, isn't that almost the price you pay for keeping them in such a ridiculously loose manner? You know, if you've enabled them to escape twice, then there's that part of the village society has to get used to it running wild. Simple as that.
This is why you could never be elected as any sort of government official, because if your decree is just to the people of Italy, well, you've been stupid enough to let that bear escape, now live with it.
Basically, yeah.
He's one of you now.
I mean, the only thing that I would worry about is someone would shoot it. Someone would hunt it.
Do you think?
That would be my only thing. So I'd have to make that illegal. I'd certainly put that into the legislation.
So you would let a wild bear stay on the run in Italy, and then you would make it a criminal offence to defend yourself from it.
No, you could defend yourself if it came at you, but you can't actively go and hunt it. That's what I'm saying.
How are you supposed to defend yourself against a bear without a gun?
Well, isn't the normal thing, aren't you supposed to stand still if a bear is sort of looking at you? If you run, that's the worst thing, isn't that right, with a bear? Punch it on the nose. Give it a little punch on the nose. That's supposed to be, or is that sharks?
That's sharks, I think.
I'm sure a bear, if you give it a little punch on the nose, they don't like that.
Do you realise the strength of a bear and how little damage you'd do to it if you punched it on the nose?
Yeah, but it would shock it. And
it would maul you to death.
Well, there's a risk you've got to take. If you've not been able to hold this bear in its enclosure properly on more than one occasion, then that's the price society must pay.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, I would. Perhaps you need to draw the line at certain animals. I mean, would you say, like a lion, perhaps, that might be... I mean, what I'm saying is that a bear's only going to attack you as a human if he calls it a problem. You're not prey.
You don't know that. Well, I mean, you've made that up.
If it's starving, it might. Yeah, like a hungry polar bear will come and get you. But it's probably more drawn to your camp because of food you have around.
Right.
And then it will see you as the biggest meal available. So, but a sort of brown bear, it's only more likely to attack you out of fear.
Or hunger, as you say. And you're aware that we don't live in a 100-acre wood here. It's not Winnie the Pooh with his honey pot. They're going to get hungry eventually. Even a well-fed bear who escapes will get hungry eventually. Well, and he won't work out can openers anytime soon. Well, then, so he's going to be a problem.
Well, then I think it's the society, the community that it is now a part of, legally, in my world, it's now legally a part of that. It's part of the community's responsibility to put food out for them to prevent themselves becoming prey.
God, I think I'd want that Margaret Ferrier as my MP before you.
Okay, so you're not into my idea. I'll just run it past you, that's all.
I think it's quite a careless policy. I don't like it.
Okay, all right. Here's another animal thing that I love this week.
Okay.
About foul-mouthed parrots having to be removed from a zoo exhibit for swearing too much.
I heard about this.
Did you hear this?
Yeah, I didn't hear them swearing, unfortunately. They should have got some audio of that.
I was trying to find exactly what swear words they were saying, and it was one parrot that taught the rest of them the swear words. So this one parrot was brought in who had obviously lived with an owner who swore at it, and then the other parrots, because they're, you know, parrots are incredibly intelligent animals, picked it all up. And then what they were also doing is laughing after swearing, because what they think is when they swore in front of visitors, the visitors would laugh. So then they picked up that there was a laughter noise to be made after the swearing.
That's brilliant. I think, you know, this is triggering a memory. Did we have a conversation about swearing parrots when we were on the radio all the all
probably
this time?
Because I was going to tell you, I may have told you this story, but my personal experience of a swearing parrot was in Derbyshire years ago when I was on holiday there, and we went to this thing where they have these things called well dressings in little villages in Derbyshire, I guess in the spring, right? And they kind of have these... They're kind of bits of art, but they're made from flowers. So it's like a little sort of, I don't know, like a little portrait of or a little picture of the village or something, all made out of flowers, right? Mm. And then they put it on the well, hence it being called a well dressing. And then they, well, certainly this one we were at, they have a little service to bless it. So the vicar comes down and does a little thing.
Okay.
There's quite a lot of people there. So we went to this thing. And just down the little road where this well was a couple of little cottages. And there was an old boy who lived in one of the cottages who was out, and it was a sunny day. So he had his parrot out in its cage. And midway through this service to bless this well dressing, the vicar said, "And now we take a moment's silence." And right in the middle of the silence, the parrot just went, "Bagger off! Bagger off!" And I just thought you couldn't have planned that any better. It was superb. And then as we walked past, after the service had gone, we walked past this place, because the guy, this old boy, obviously knowing that a lot of visitors were coming for the well dressing thing, was having like a little garage sale. So he was out and about. So we were kind of just milling about, and this parrot, he was swearing like a trooper. And you just assume that the old boy just normally swears out loud in the house, and the parrot just picked it up.
Oh, I love that. Because I think when we were on the radio, it was a similar news story doing the rounds about parrots. And I am always trying to look for loopholes in the rules to get out slightly naughtier things than we're allowed to say on the radio, because it'll come as a surprise to nobody that you're not allowed to swear on the radio.
No.
But... can a parrot swear on the radio? Because technically, that is just an animal making a noise. I wouldn't apologise for a swearing parrot on the radio.
Wouldn't you?
No.
I think you would have had to.
It's an animal making a noise.
No,
you wouldn't apologise if a cow mooed in the background.
Yeah, but then the cow's probably not saying fuck off, is it? You know, if we'd brought a parrot into the studio and it just started saying fuck off, I think we would have had to have apologised.
I would have refused, point blank.
Well, then we would have been sacked sooner than we were.
We were sacked anyway.
Yeah, but we didn't. We were sacked without a swearing parrot. Imagine what would have happened if we'd had one. But I love, like, have you ever, anyone in your family ever kept birds of any sort?
No.
My great aunt always had a budgie. And it was really interesting how over the years, you know, budgies, I don't know how long a budgie lives, but she'd have budgies for whatever their lifespan was. So overall, my lifetime, I saw quite a few budgies, right? And, it's amazing how they all have their own little character, and some of them did talk. She didn't teach any to swear, but some would be very vocal. And as a kid, I loved that, and I would try and teach them to say, you know, who's a pretty boy, things like that.
I didn't know budgie spoke. I thought that was just a parrot thing.
No, but budgies can. Yeah, because the budgie is like a little parrot, isn't it, really?
You see, and people think you don't learn anything listening to this podcast.
There you go, yeah. Oh, I think, you know, there are quite a... I mean, some birds are incredible. Have you ever seen that footage? I wish I had the sound now. But have you ever seen that footage on some David Attenborough programme where... it shows a bird. I don't know what sort of bird it is. It's like I was going to say a minor bird, but I don't know if it is. But they are incredibly good mimics, whatever this bird is. And in its natural environment, in the jungle, it will mimic other birds. It will mimic whatever it hears, right?
I think I have seen this.
And it's learnt to mimic the noise of the chainsaw as all the jungle is being destroyed by the tree
feathers. That's depressing.
I know. And then there was another one that it was able to mimic a car alarm. I mean, and it was incredible. Like, it's amazing how they're able to mimic so well. They're incredible animals, really.
Oh.
So there's a bit of me that would kind of like to have a bird. But the other thing is, my aunt would, she had one budgie who was quite an aggressive budgie, right? And it would come and sit on your shoulder and then it would bite your ear to bits.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was quite, I mean, I don't know if it was trying to be affectionate, but I remember as a kid it being quite painful, and it would chew up any paper. If you left paper anywhere, it would chew it all up. It's quite an aggressive budgie, but it's still sweet in its own little way.
But I'm not, you know, slagging off your auntie or anything. I think she's probably, you know, just a lovely woman with a lovely pet. But there is something to me quite sad about literally caging an animal that has the ability to fly. And
oh no, I know what you mean. I mean, this, she would let them out and fly around the house, but I mean, it's not quite the same. I understand that.
My auntie had a, she didn't have a pet, she had a lodger, and the lodger had a pet. The lodger had a pet, and it got loose in the house one day, this pet.
Yeah.
And the pet was a bird-eating tarantula.
Fucking hell. Like, I wouldn't let a lodger in my house if I had one of them.
No, I don't think I would either.
So what happened?
I wouldn't want them in a 2-mile radius of the house. I don't know if they ever did find it.
What do you mean you don't know if they... You couldn't just live in the house knowing that that could pop out any time.
I was distressed when I heard this until I remembered that she lives in Northern Ireland and it's nowhere near me.
The final animal thing I just want to share with you.
Yeah?
Just because it's the best thing I've come across this week.
Better than swearing parrots and bison on the loose.
Yeah, yeah.
This
was a video that I found on YouTube. Do you know when something pops up said, you know, that you might like this sort of thing?
Yeah,
so I don't know what I'd been watching that made them think I'd like this. I think I'd been watching things about cats and dogs and stuff. And so you've got a dog, right? Do you know what your... I mean, is there any way you would know what your dog gets up to when you're not in the house?
No, I suppose you could set up some sort of webcam or nanny cam or something. But no, I do know what she does. She sleeps.
She sleeps, yeah. Right? So she doesn't... Because, you know, some people come home, their dog's chewed the place to shit, you know, all of that.
Oh, no, she's an old girl now. She just sleeps and shits, and that's about it.
Well, we're talking about, you know, birds mimicking humans, right? So this one family, they set up a camera to see what their dog would do while they were out. They've got a piano, so presumably someone sits at the piano, plays and sings,
right?
The dog seems to have picked up on this, and while they're out, plays the piano and sings.
That's incredible.
Do you want to hear it?
I'd love to hear it.
There we go.
That is lovely.
I love the way it sings and then plays the piano. It is actually making a tune.
Yeah.
It's not just a random plinky plonky. It's going plinky plonky.
That's really, really nice.
Isn't that amazing?
I love that.
Yeah. Better than Elton John as well. Now, you know, I like to read books, Ben. I'm a bit of a reader.
Yeah.
Although I haven't been reading that much recently. I've had a spate of not reading. But I like to go online and just sort of search for books, anything I might be interested in. And I came across... Well, it sort of popped up as a recommendation because I put into Google ideas for books, right?
Okay.
And this thing popped up. And I suppose just because I'd used the word books, this came up. And it was books that have questions as their titles. And these are incredible, right? I mean, you've got to sort of think, who's written this? And why have you written this?
Sorry, have you been impressed by the titles of the books, which just happen to be questions?
Just, yeah.
Okay.
So, first book on the list, What's Going On Down There?
Okay, I hesitate to ask.
It's answers to questions boys find hard to ask.
Right. Oh, I'm kind of curious about this book.
See, well, this is the thing, aren't you? You know, you get a book title that's a question, you suddenly think, well, I'd quite like to read this now. I want to find out a bit more about it.
It's a good hook. Good tease.
We can only assume that it's a book, I don't know, about... I don't know, puberty. It's like for that age group, maybe, or maybe younger children. You know what it's like when younger children find it. That's all they talk about.
Well, the fact it's specifically boys would lead you to think it probably is about puberty.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on down there is the title of that book. So that I don't think I'm going to order that one.
No, it's not the something you'd ever want to hear, is it?
The next one I've found quite interesting. Just the book's called Was Karl Marx a Satanist?
I don't know.
I don't think he was. The description of the author in this little review of the book is, the guy who wrote this is most certainly a crackpot.
Okay.
Just seems that the man goes on the image of Karl Marx. I don't really understand, but this is what I'm saying. I don't know much about these books. It's just the titles.
I mean, the title would suggest that the author has an axe to grind about Karl Marx.
Yeah. Here's another one. The book's just called Whose Bottom Is This?
Tell me more.
It seems that it's a children's book about animals.
Right.
And I think it's, you've got to tell the different animals apart from looking at their backsides.
Right.
I thought if you're teaching children about animals, go with the face.
Yeah.
The face would seem to be the more obvious go-to part of the body for animal recognition.
You would have thought so.
Because, okay, you might see an animal from behind, but most likely it's going to be from the front.
Yeah, you know, you're wandering through Italy, something's coming at you. You think, what is that? I wait for it to turn around. Oh, it's a bear!
It's a bear.
I know that arse anywhere.
I wasn't sure until I saw its hole. Here's another one. I think you'll like this one. It's a book by a woman called Lorraine Peterson. If God Loves Me, Why Can't I Get My Locker Open? It sounds like a very specific problem that she's got.
Yeah.
I reckon she wrote this when she was in a rage similar to your parking space woman. I mean, she's probably gone and written a book, If God Loves Me, Why Does Some Tit Park in Front of My Driving?
Well, at least she's managed to channel her rage into a profit-making book.
Yeah. I'll give you a couple more, right? How Green Were the Nazis?
That's a strange book to write about, isn't it?
Apparently, they were the first to have an anti-tobacco campaign.
What is the point of this book? Is she sort of... Is the intention to say, oh, you know, Nazis, not all bad, they recycled?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it does seem a very odd thing, because you can't, no matter what the subject matter is, there's not a good slant to be put on the Nazis. They could have been the most environmentally friendly people. It wouldn't have redeemed them from the bad they did.
No, not exactly.
So I don't know if that's going to be a big seller.
No.
I'll give you one more. This is by a writer called Gustav Reinier.
Right.
The English. Are they human?
Again, it sounds like he's got a bit of an agenda.
Apparently this guy has lived in England for quite a while when he wrote this book. He was a professor at University College London. And he does seem to apparently have a positive view of the English. He calls us pragmatic and reliable. But his views about the Irish are a little bit different.
Okay, I am half Irish, so I'll look forward to this.
Yeah, get ready for this. According to Gustav Reinier, the Irish are bloodthirsty and unreliable.
Racist, anyone?
It got me thinking to look up the books I've already got on my bookshelf, though. I got a few books on my bookshelf that are odd titles. I thought I'd share some of these with you.
Please do.
I've got a book that's called, well, I've got two volumes of the book called Is It Just Me or Is Everything Shit?
Oh, that's a very you book to have. I like that.
It's an A to Z directory of just shit things.
I love that you've got not only one, but two
volumes of that. I've got a book, 50 People Who Buggered Up Britain.
Right, nice.
Do you want to know some of the people that are mentioned in this book?
How recent is the book?
It's a few years old, but it's got... I'll just go through the first four chapters for you.
I hope David Cameron gets a mention.
I think it might be a little bit before Cameron's time.
Right,
Tony
okay.
Blair's in there.
Okay.
Paul Burrell, the... not our old mate from the radio station.
No, not Paul Burrell. I always wanted to have a jingle for Paul Burrell. Yeah. Hide the cutlery! It's Paul... Oh, no, it's Paul Burrell.
Who else is in there? Geoffrey Archer.
Okay.
Ed Balls.
What did Ed Balls do?
Well, I don't know. I have to read the chapter.
Yeah, you've not read any of these books. You just buy them and put them on the shelf.
Another couple of books I've got here. This one was bought for me. I didn't buy this book, How to Poo at Work.
Okay.
And finally, I've got a book. Again, it was a present. It's just called It Looks Like a Cock.
I'm guessing that does what it says on the tin. Trev, as I alluded to earlier on, I have had a response from the Department of Transport.
Yes, now this is exciting because last week I was amazed that your MP had escalated this to the Transport Department and Grant Shapps, the Minister of Transport, and then I really didn't think it would go any further. But here we are, just a few days on, you've had another response.
Yes, yeah, sadly it wasn't from Grant Shapps. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, but this is the Minister of State for Transport, Chris Heaton-Harris.
Not heard of Chris Heaton-Harris, no.
No, so it hasn't gone all the way to Shapps, but never mind.
I thought there'd be a barrier there. I couldn't see it going right to the top.
So I won't bore you with the entire response because it is quite drab.
Is it long-winded, is it?
It's fairly long-winded. The gist of it is basically cycling is good for your health, which I wasn't disputing, but...
That's a long-winded way of just saying, fuck off, mate. So, you might as well have just written that. It's like, fuck off, mate.
So I'll just read you a few choice bits that I caught my interest.
Yeah.
The Emergency Active Travel Fund, the EATF, was announced on the 9th of May and included £225 million of funding into two tranches for local authorities.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to explain how it's allocated, blah, blah, blah. Local authorities are free to make their own decisions about the streets under their care, provided they take account of the relevant legislation. They are responsible for ensuring their actions are within the law and are accountable to the local people for their decisions and for their performance.
Right.
He concludes with, local councillors are responsible for ensuring the local decisions about street infrastructure take account of the needs of the opinions of local people. The department does not directly manage any roads, and so Mr. Harmer may wish to raise his concerns about any specific methods used by his local highway authority to his local councillor.
Well, I was going to say, this is the next phase of this, isn't it?
Please extend my gratitude to Mr. Harmer for taking the time to write in with his concerns.
Right,
which
nice.
I kind of think might be as tongue-in-cheek a remark as my entire letter was. So I've contacted my MP.
Yeah.
My MP has contacted the Department for Transport.
Yeah.
And my Department for Transport are now telling me to get in touch with my local councillor. Is it just me? Am I being a bit conspiratorial? Or is there a lot of buck passing going on here?
That's politics, mate.
You think?
What you've done is you have now entered the realm of the bureaucracy of national and local politics. Because now you'll write to your council and then they will pass it on to someone else. They will say, well, you know, the man responsible for this is now... You will never get a conclusion to this. You are now on the letter-writing merry-go-round of writing to politicians.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get anywhere. In fact, in preparation for this podcast, I went for a little drive today to get you a picture, which I thought you might want to tweet out from our Twitter account, at Trev and Ben, if you want to see the picture. I'm just sending it to you now.
I just tell you that I had a conversation with my family about these cycle things the other day because we were all in the car together and driving past the ones they put up in Croydon.
Yeah.
And I was asked the question. They are totally unaware that we've talked about it on a podcast because they don't listen. And they said to me, well, what do you think of these? And I went, I think they're a great idea. I think they're superb.
Do you? Look at your phone.
And then we had a long conversation about... But yes, they are in principle a good idea. But what my family had an issue with is that they're not all along. They're in little pockets of spaces. Then there's an area where there isn't any. So actually, what is the point? If you're going to have them, put them all along.
Yeah.
So, and we don't have them. They're not bright orange. I was telling them that you have the bright orange ones.
Yes, hideous.
Right, you just sent me a picture. Right, they've been flattened.
£225 million. You know what doesn't cost £225 million? Yeah. A bucket of paint.
So there we are. That's just about it for another Trev and Ben podcast. We normally do some recommendations at this point. I haven't really been watching too much new. The one thing, well, a couple of things. I've been watching the sitcom Ghosts, which has got much better second series. I'm quite enjoying that.
Okay.
It's like it's made by the people who do all the horrible history stuff. And it's just a bit silly. It's not too rude. So that's been worth watching.
Okay.
And but the other thing I'm really into, and I've talked to you about this before when we were on the radio, I mentioned it. I've probably mentioned it on the podcast before, but I don't think we've had enough pushing this programme out for people who don't know about it. The Repair Shop.
Oh, not this again.
No, because
fuck's
what I've realised...
No,
listen, right? Because what I've realised is it's about the only programme that really makes me feel good. I was watching it this week. There's been a few. I've seen most episodes of all of them, but there's been a few on recently that I've not seen before, right? So I was watching it, and I suddenly realised how much I was smiling watching it. And I just thought, it's such a wonderful programme. You know, I mean, do you know one of my favourite things? And I've kept this on my Skybox because if I ever feel I just need a little lift, I watched this little clip, right? So it's an old lady. She's in her 90s.
Right.
Right? And she's got an old... she's got an old tram seat from an old tram from Manchester or somewhere up north, right?
How's she got that?
Well, because when they got rid of the trams in that area back in the 30s or 40s, whenever it was when they first got rid of the trams, her parents, I think, managed to get one of the seats off the tram. And then this seat was... She got the seat eventually. And it, over the years, it got in a right old state, right? And then they did it up, and they got it looking pretty much as it would have done on the tram. They even put the tram number on the seat, which the woman loved. And then there's this moment where they unveil it, and this woman, she's so made up, and she holds Dominic Chinnery is the man who does all the metal work, right? So he's in charge of putting the seat back, and she holds his hand and she says, I can see now the work you've put into that. It's perfect. That's what it is. It's perfect. You've made an old lady very happy. I'll remember you forever. And that is just such a wonderful moment. And if I need a little pickup, I'll watch that little clip.
I think they should have slapped the cuffs on her. She's clearly a vandal and a thief.
No. I have you ever watched it?
Never.
After all the times I've... Can you please watch The Repair Shop?
No, it's so
it's
dull.
No, it's not. Because it's an amazing... Well, there's so much going on in it. So you've got the emotional stories about the object itself and the history of the object, which is sometimes incredible. Like this week, there was a set of bagpipes that had probably been played on the fields of the First World War, right? So you've got the history of...
off it goes to Geppetto's workshop for a tarting up.
And then and then Blue and his son, the bagpipe experts...
Blue?
His name was Blue. He gets them working again. So, and then you watch these amazing people who are just at the top of their game in terms of their craft, getting these things looking as they should have done or as they do, you know. And it's just an amazing thing. And then they come back and they unveil how what it looks like now. And then there's often tears of joy. Oh,
I mean, if it makes you happy, fill your boots. But I am not spending my precious free time watching dick around with bagpipes.
I want you to watch an episode. Just one episode, and let me know what you think. It's incredible.
How long are the episodes?
Well, they have different lengths.
What's the shortest?
I think the shortest one, there might even be a half hour version, but you've got to watch at least a 45 minute version. They have an hour version as well. But the 45 minute version is three items per episode, and it's amazing. The Repair Shop. If you've never watched The Repair Shop, it's on BBC One on a Wednesday night, and I record it every day.
Oh,
it's on every day in the afternoon.
You've not series linked The Repair Shop,
have
you?
God. And I watch it by evening's viewing. Once I've finished all my work and everything, right, it gets to about 6 o'clock, I sit down and I watch the latest episode of The Chase that I've recorded, followed by the latest episode of The Repair Shop. That's my evening.
God, that's tragic.
So look, The Repair Shop, if you've never seen it, watch it.
Okay. I did have a recommendation of my own. By the way, before I tell you my recommendation, I should let you know that your recommendation went down very well last week with, was it The Murder Next Door or An American Murder Next Door? Or something like that?
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it, but people who I know listen to the podcast have let me know that they heard the podcast, heard your recommendation, and it went down very well.
Very good, yes.
I have discovered this week... because I'm quite into my food and things.
Yes.
I discovered a YouTuber by the name of Beard Meets Food.
Beard Meets Food. You're having a go at me about the repair shop, and you're watching a hairy man shuffling meat about.
And meats is spelt M-E-A-T-S, not meats, as right, in okay. traditional. Yeah. Beard Meets Food. He's a British competitive...
I hope he wears, like, a beard guard. Like, has he got hairs falling in the food? I'm not into this at all already.
I tell you what, if I'm watching the repair shop, you're watching Beard Meets Food. He is a British competitive eater, and he right. is incredible, the amount of food he can put away. And he's not... You're probably thinking...
Oh, I think I might have seen a clip of this. Is he like a northern bloke?
He is northern, yeah.
I think I saw a clip of this, yes.
He's not what you'd expect. He's not some enormous, hulking, great man. He's very trim, but he's not what you'd think of for someone who can eat this amount of food.
Is he a sportsman? Like, was he a rugby player or something?
I don't know that much about him.
Different.
And I'd say he's a good YouTuber. He's entertaining. But the one thing that can be a bit grim is when his beard gets covered in food. Is a bit disgusting, but if you can push past that,
and that's probably there for days, he probably keeps it there for little snacks.
I was watching it with Mrs. Ben, and she was saying, you know what, this guy's great, but the beard with the food in it, could he not shave
it off, mate?
You can't be called Beard Meets Food and then shave off the beard. It's part of his persona.
The show,
what, Chin Meets Food? Yes. that's not a thing.
At least the chin's, you know, it's white and clean, isn't it?
So give it a go.
All right. I'll tell you the weird thing that I ended up just watching, which I've never watched before, was Sunday afternoon. I was having a bit of a lazy Sunday afternoon, just flicking through, not much on. And I came across, I've never watched it before, I got stuck on the Great British Bake Off.
How is that? Because I am a bit of a self-confessed foodie. I don't really like the word foodie, but I know what it means. I've never really bothered with the Bake Off.
Well, it kept me glued. I mean, I happened to come across it when they were supposed to be making rainbow bagels, and then I watched it all the way through to the end. I don't like Paul Hollywood, though.
He's
a smug little git. Well, that's something about him I don't like.
I've never watched any of Paul Hollywood, and I'm really sorry, Paul Hollywood, not that you'll ever hear this, but you do look a little bit smarmy to me.
He comes across that as well.
Shake that. And I've never even heard him really do a segment or anything, so he might be perfectly pleasant, but he just looks a bit smarmy.
I must admit, every time he spoke, there was something about me just like my skin would crawl. And that's probably a really hard... He's probably a lovely man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I've probably been really harsh. There's probably people that listen to my voice going, oh, just shut the fuck up, horrid man. But I just know there's something about him I didn't like. But I watched it, it kept me going. And
the reason I was put off Bake Off was always because of... Again, having never seen it, this is very unfair of me, but I just assumed it was sort of very BBC Mary Berry making silly puns about soggy bottoms, and I just thought, you know what, I'm not interested.
It probably was. I mean, it's on Channel 4 now, and Mary Berry's not on it anymore, so I'm sure they still do that. As I say, it's the first time I've ever watched it, but it suddenly it gripped me. You know, I do sort of think it's like I watch any cookery thing, like Gordon Ramsay. I just think, calm down, mate. Well done, you can cook. So when I hear Paul Hollywood, like he comes, yeah, you know, he eats a bit of bread. He's going, you know, he's from Liverpool, so please excuse the accent. But you know, he's like, hey, you know, it's not, you know, he needs more flavour. Like, you know, needs. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck off, mate. It's bread. And Matt Lucas, like he it was brilliant. He went.
I didn't know Paul Hollywood was from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Strike two. Sorry, it's a joke. You're known for your sense of humour. It's a joke.
So Matt Lucas says to him, I mean, how much flavour does bread need? And Paul Hollywood's face was like, you know, it's like, calm down, mate. It's a joke. You know what I mean? He's like, bread's not that. You know, well done, you can make bread. There we go. So there we are. That's it for the Trevor and Ben podcast this week. Thanks very much for listening and downloading. Get in touch with us anytime about anything you want us to chat about. Let us know. We're at Trevor and Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, and take it easy.
Bye.